Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the show. Before we get to my guest, I just want to tell you what's going on with my one-man show, Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio at the Jerry Orbach Theater on Broadway in New York City. We got six shows left. We go through August 22nd. We have three shows this week, August 13th, 14th, and 15th, and then August 20th, 21st, and 22nd. If you're in the New York area or you're coming to New York to visit, come and see my show. It's funny. It's about the audience. Audience is getting to tell their stories. They're amazing stories from people. Like this guy that came on stage, I said, how long have you been married? He goes, 30 years. Points to his wife. There's my wife. Met her at church. Talking about church. We're church-going church. We're church-going people. You got kids? I go, yeah. He goes, I got two 30-year-old kids. I go, oh, they're twins? He goes, no. I go, how does that happen? He goes, well, how do you have two 30-year-old kids there and they're, you know, they're not twins? He's like, well, he starts laughing. He goes, I was 17. I met one woman at church, got her pregnant. 9 months later, I met my wife at church. I was 17 still, got her pregnant, and I got two kids. So this guy is picking up chicks at church. And all I can say is it's one hell of a church. Had another woman born without an esophagus. Yeah. You know what they made it out of? Large intestine. There you go. I'm telling you. You learn something new every day. Go to Ticketmaster.com. Click on Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio. You get 50% off, 50, half off if you use the code PMFAN. PMFAN. Great stories, amazing stories. Met two lesbians, married. One of them was married to her husband, had three kids. Met this lesbian, came out. They got married. They all live in the same house together. The woman divorced her husband, so the two lesbians, the ex-husband, and the three kids all live in the same house together, and the two lesbians sleep in the bed that the husband and the wife used to sleep in, and the husband sleeps down the hall in another room. So, and they look like the people next door. So there you go. Everybody's got a story. Come and tell yours. Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio, Jerry Orbach Theater, and it is happening now through August 22nd, and use the code PMFAN. You get 50% off, half off. And my guest this week, Denny Seiwell, who is the founding member of Wings. Amazing story about how he auditioned for Paul McCartney, writing with Paul McCartney. Just an insider's look at working with one of the most brilliant musicians ever in Paul McCartney. But also Denny, and a brilliant musician in his own right. So really cool conversation about music and making music and working with one of the iconic musical figures of anybody's lifetime. Enjoy that. Enjoy Denny. Come see my show, and we'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks. Very excited to have my next guest on because I have no musical ability whatsoever. I'm not musically inclined, and we have a great, great musician who has got a new album out called Boomerang, a jazz album, and also is a founding member of Wings, a little band you might have heard of. Denny Seiwell, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you, Paul.
Yeah. I don't know if I can fix this lack of musical ability of mine, but if you have any suggestions, I'd really appreciate it.
Listen to music that you love. That's all you can do.
Yeah. How was it sort of doing jazz? I mean, you come out of rock, right? But, I mean, what was the motivation to sort of do a jazz album for you?
Oh, no, I started in jazz. Before I met Paul McCartney, I was a jazz drummer in New York. I mean, my first gig in New York was at the old Half Note Jazz Club, and I was a house drummer in the rhythm, great rhythm section. We played with Al Cohn and Zoot Sims and Anita O'Day and all these jazz greats.
Cool.
And through that job, I caught on in the studios to get some of the recording work, which became a little more rock. But there was some jazz being done then, too. I did records with Astro Gilberto from The Girl from Ipanema, and J.J. Johnson and Kay Winding. Mm-hmm. I did a record with them that's called Betwixt and Between. It's still on the radio today. So it was a mishmash, but it was a time when jazz and rock were kind of melding into the popular music of the United States. So it was an interesting time. And through becoming one of the top session guys in New York at the time, that's when Paul came to town to make the Ram album, and he auditioned a bunch of drummers and guitar players. And he liked my vibe and, you know, my playing and my attitude and everything. We had fun and hung out. And I never thought I was going to get the gig, but 3 or 4 days later, I get a call from him. He goes, "Oh, this is Paul. I'd like to hire you for this record." I said, "Give me a second to look at my book. Let me see if I'm available." and the rest was history. We finished Ram, and Ram was out 3 or 4 months, and he called me and said, "How would you and your wife like to come up to Scotland and just take a little vacation?" And I said, "Yeah, I've been working pretty hard, so that's a good idea."
Wow.
So we went up to Scotland, and I hung out at his farm, and he said, "I miss my old band. Let's put a band together." And the rest was history. We put Wings together, and I moved to London, and lived in London for 3-4 years. I don't remember, 3 years probably closer. And put Wings together, and the rest was history.
That's incredible. I love how you say it all, like, very nonchalantly, like, "Yeah, and then this," and then he said, "Come to Scotland," and then my old band, that's such a credit to me. When you audition for something like that, does he give you the option of what you want to play, or does he just right on the spot say, "This is what I want you to do," or are you preparing ahead of time?
Yeah, well, this is really weird, because it was just a basement, ground floor, ratty set of drums, Paul and Linda sitting in the corner, no furniture, no nothing, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, "Yo," I walked down the steps, and I said, "You're Paul McCartney." He goes, "Yeah, that's me." I said, "What's up?" He said, "Well, I'm looking to make a record here in town. I'm looking at some musicians. Would you mind playing for me?" I said, "Sure. What, do you got a guitar or something you can play? We can play together." He said, "No, just you." I said, "Okay, what the hell? Yeah, what do you want?" And he said, "Just play some rock and roll." So I went right into my Ringo bag. I channeled Ringo, and I think it was a little bit of that attitude and the way I played. And he loved it, and that was that.
What is that Ringo style versus a John Bonham style versus your style in terms of drummers? This is where I know there's distinctions. But as just an average listener, I don't have the ear for it. But clearly, like, how would you define?
Well, Ringo does
style?
A lot of stuff, a lot more stuff on the tom-toms and his grooves and stuff. And I'm a tom-tom freak too. So immediately, Paul said, "Let me hear some rock and roll." I went, you know, I just went into some energetic kind of a Ringo thing, and he dug it.
Right.
Yeah, I started to play some shuffle time and different beats that a drummer would have to play.
Right.
And the working relationship on the Ram album was pretty awesome, though. I mean, we really hit it off musically. He didn't tell me what to play ever on that record. He gave me a clean palette. He would sing the song that we were going to record that day. We would come up with our parts for a couple hours, and then we'd start doing takes on it. And he was happy with everything, except when we were doing the song Uncle Albert. I was playing a part, and he said, "That's okay, but I wonder if you can find a part that's more sparse and allows the vocal to come through, something that starts and stops rather than constant drumming through it." I went, "Yeah, let me think about that for a second." So I fooled around, we tried some different stuff, and I came up with another part. He said, "That's it, perfect, just like that."
Wow. So he would write the lyrics and then give you all the freedom? Because I had him on my podcast, and we talked about a lot of things, obviously. And we talked about his time in Wings, and I said, and I asked him, I go, "How was that? You know, you're coming from essentially a band of equals, although John and he were maybe a little bit, probably more in the front of the band, but to being the guy who is the band with, you know, with his name." And he said, "Well, yeah, there's definitely pressure on my shoulders," but he said, "You know, we were pretty democratic." And I kind of thought that was like him being nice about the Wings band, but it sounds like it's true. Like, he would let you write that section.
Oh yeah!
Wow, that's incredible.
Always.
I don't mean that in a bad way about you. I'm just like, I heard that he's very particular, and he's Paul McCartney, obviously, and that was really terrific. And how collaborative
he was. Looking for another viewpoint as well, though, too. You know, and I really think that he came in with these great songs. And I think for the Beatles to have recorded the songs that we recorded on Ram would have really been a task.
Why?
But for New York session guys, we're kind of used to reaching into the well and going deep into the well. Now, I'm not saying anything bad about the Beatles. They're all just, Ringo's still one of my favorite drummers of all times, and George, and I mean, just everything about them. But their process is totally different than what we did in on the Ram album. And I believe our process would be the studio musicians come in, you got to get it right away.
Yeah.
And we did. We never spent more than one day on a song, and it was usually only 4 or 5 hours on each song that, on the Ram album. Mm. And we got it all when it was, while it was still hot, kind of deal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That, and it really was evident in listening to it then.
And so when you say go deep into the well, in other words, the session guy has the ability to play very different genres of music right off the top
right.
of your head
right.
and sort of and that, whereas I guess if it were a Beatles session, they'd have to really work at finding it, right? Like it would spend more time.
Yeah, probably so, yeah.
Yeah. And what was it about jazz for you of the different genres that as opposed to blues or rock or whatever that drew you to it initially?
Well, jazz for me, jazz is a much more interesting concept for a drummer because you become a voice rather than just the bed of rhythm. You actually have a voice in what's being said musically. And
what do you mean by that? How so?
Well, rather than boom, boom, back, boom, boom, back, you know, all for
yeah.
3 minutes,
yeah.
Jazz, you can get in there and actually be playing fills and not so much fills, but playing parts that influence what somebody else plays. So you're an actual voice in the music.
And so there, this riff starts to happen, but, and so you're creating in the moment with other,
exactly.
other band
yeah.
members.
It's much more creative format for a drummer. And it's funny, but a lot of rock drummers can't play jazz, and a lot of jazz players can't play rock.
Why is that?
You know, it's funny how that works. So it's only a handful of guys. But some of the great rock drummers, you know, John Bonham and Jeff Porcaro and Ginger Baker, they've all come from a jazz background.
So why?
So it's knowing what not to play that becomes key after a while.
Oh, so that's why it's hard to transition from jazz to rock because you've got to sort of be on a measured line, so to speak. What is so when you're improvising with other, you want to be surprised at every turn, right? I would imagine you're the drummer, I'm the bass player, somebody else is playing the guitar, and we're all going to sort of riff off each other. You want to be surprised every time, or once you start to work with somebody on a regular basis, you kind of know where their improv is going to go.
It's a little of each of those, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty of it. I mean, in jazz, you get to play off of what's been played. You react to it, you know. And that's why this trio has been so much fun for me because you know, I found two guys, when the three of us get together, it's like you don't have to talk. All of a sudden, we're off and on a whole other direction
right.
because that's where the music takes us. And we all understand where it's going, and it's just so easy
yeah.
and so much fun to follow it to wherever it goes.
Yeah.
So we're all speaking another language, and everybody understands what that language is without knowing that we do. You know, that's what's so beauty about the trio.
And I guess the relationship's important. Like you talk about the trio, and I'm sure you guys have a good relationship. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to work together. But what about
absolutely.
In that audition for Paul, for example, how important was the, you know, off the drums relationship in terms of that session where you auditioned for him? Like, is he sizing you up as a person and sitting down and chatting with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And I was treating it lightly. You know, I wasn't coming in there and like, oh, Mr. McCartney, sir, it wasn't like that. Hey, I walked down into this dirty basement,
yeah.
ground floor basement with a ratty set of drums and said, you're Paul McCartney, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm Paul McCartney, I'm going to make a record. You know, I mean, it was like, my attitude was, well, I'm used to meeting people like this. Not really used to meeting a Beatle, but I've been playing with James Brown and Paul, you know, John Denver, mm-hmm. Billy Joel. I've been making a lot of records in those days, so he was just another possible client, although he had a little more to him than most.
Well, I think that's how I got him on my podcast. I ran into him. I was working on the Colbert Report at the time, and he was in the hallway. He was promoting, I think he was actually promoting his Wings days, and he had a new, compilation out. And he was just standing.
Was it Wings fan?
I think so. I can't remember, but I know okay. It was Wings. It was not a Beatles thing. It was a Wings thing. And he was just standing in the hallway after rehearsal, chewing gum, leaning against the wall. It looked like he was waiting for a bus, and he didn't have anybody. He didn't have like a handler or like security.
Right.
And my whole world slows down. I turn around the corner and there's fucking Paul McCartney. I'm like, oh my God, it's Paul McCartney. Should I, like, my brain slows down and I'm like, should I say hi? Should I not say hi? Cause like, you know, like you, like I've worked in TV. I've been around a lot of big celebrities and you know, usually you leave him alone, but I'm like, look, man, I've said to myself, I'm never going to meet this guy again. He's in the hallway. I'll just go up, say I'm a huge fan and walk away, which I did. And then he called me back and he started talking to me. And then we're talking for like 10 minutes just about life and stuff. And I didn't ask him for a photograph and I didn't ask him for a picture. And long story short, I think the key. So then at one point I said, would you want to do my podcast? I'd love to talk to people how they make music. And he went, yeah, sure. And I just was like, and I didn't expect him to say yes. And it blew my head off my shoulders. And I think what happened was I didn't ask him for an autograph or a picture. I just treated him like a regular guy. And, you know, didn't kiss his ass or anything like that, you know.
Sure. That's very smart. I mean, people used to come up to us having dinner, and they want to, you know, we're kind of eating here. Right. They want an autograph or a picture or something. You know,
it's funny you mentioned that. Frank Oz, who's created essentially the Muppets with Jim Henson, and he's the voice of Yoda and Miss Piggy, and he's working with me on a Broadway show that I'm doing, and he told me the story. He goes, you have no idea what people will do. He goes, I fell off my bike and I'm in the emergency room getting stitches in my head. And he said, doctors and nurses, these are highly educated people, doctors and nurses were printing out pictures of Yoda and coming to me and asking me to sign it while they were sewing my head up.
Yeah, people are funny.
Yeah, it's a little crazy.
And Paul had his share of that, you know. I'm really happy for him. He seems very happy. We talk a lot, you know, not as much as I like, but he's super busy. We text and talk pretty regularly, and he's excited about my new album. I think it's coming out the same day as his record.
And in writing this album, like what, were you trying to say something in particular, or is it tap into a mood that you're in at the time you're writing it, or how does that work?
Oh, no, when I had the opportunity came from a new label out here in Los Angeles called Quarto Valley Records. And when Bruce Quarto heard about my trio and we had a conversation, he's only got 5 artists, and I'm the only jazz artist he has on the new label. Hmm. But he gave me the opportunity to go in and make a killer record to go in. We recorded it at one of the best studios in L.A. called NRG. And then, thank God, my buddy Al Schmidt mixed the record for us over at Capitol Studios. So we had the best of the best. Now, all we had to do was come up with material that really met our standards. Mm-hmm. So we went right into the well, and we found material that was challenging musically, but something that would be interesting to the listener, and something that had energy and was uplifting and musically challenging, and all of these ingredients. And we came up with 12 songs, 11, and on the 12th song, I said, "Well, we should do a McCartney song on the record because it helps with bringing some new people in to listen to jazz that may not have listened to jazz."
Yeah.
And I thought, well, why not do the track that I'm best known for, which is Live and Let Die? So that was my idea. And we just sat around here at my house rehearsing one afternoon. And I said, well, let's do it like a jazz trio, a shuffle, you know. And so everybody said, yeah, that'll work. So we pieced it together, tried to get every section of the song into our version. And when we recorded it, I sent it to Paul just to make sure that he would like it. You know, he loved it. He thought it was very cool.
How is that? And, there's so much going on in that song. You're responsible for the drums in that song. Is that right?
And so, yeah, of course.
And how? How that seems like a very complicated song to write when it was written when you were part of Wings. How did that
work?
Well,
I tell you what, I watched Fall write that song. We were at his house up in England, in London. We were up at the house, and he said he read the book the night before the Ian Fleming novel, right. Live and Let Die. He said they want me to write a theme for it, so he sat down at the piano and he said, "Let me see James Bond. I need some chase music. There's a lot of chases in here. Ba bum bum, ba ba bum. That sounds pretty good. Ba ba bum, ba ba bum, ba ba bum, ba ba bum, ba ba bum. He made it up. Boom. There's that little chase scene." He said, "Now I need a theme that's going to tie it all together. When we were young, that's about to do it." So he writes this little melody.
Yeah.
He has that done. Then he says, "Now, because a lot of it was shot in Jamaica, there's a lot of boat scenes and crashing boats and the Jamaicans and all that. We need some reggae. So what does it matter to you?"
Oh, wow.
So he had all of these different elements in there, which is, that's what a songwriter can do. He can craft a song out of just all of these different elements.
Yeah.
And I think it was floating around in his head before he actually sat down and started writing it. So by the time he sat down at the piano, that song was crafted and put together within an hour, half an hour probably.
Are you serious? Jesus.
Dead serious. And we had our instruments there, so we all jumped on our instruments in the living room, and we started making up our parts to it.
Mm, that's unbelievable.
And so within a couple hours' time, we had our parts together, and then Paul made a quick a cassette recording of us doing it, sent it off to George Martin, who wrote all the string arrangements, and a week later, we're at his studio, Air London, and we're live with a 40-piece orchestra in a nice big room. Look at the violins. Everything's in the room at the same time. We went in and recorded that song, complete, overdubs, mixes, everything in 3 hours.
Wow, that's incredible.
Today they take 3 days to get a drum sound, but we finished the whole damn track in 3 hours.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And that's the best way to work, because it stays fresh for you, as opposed to burning out on take after take after take, right?
Yeah, we did maybe 4 or 5 takes max to get the with the orchestra live, you know.
And is that how you work as a songwriter too? Sort of like you, well, obviously he was working off the book, so that informed kind of where he wanted to go with the song. Your inspiration comes just from something that happened that day or in your life, or something you've read, or like where do you get your
all of the above?
Yeah,
you just hope and pray for inspiration.
Yeah,
and it comes from every kind of source there is, you know.
Yeah.
But and it's when we were recording this record, you know, like all of a sudden you would bring in a tune like Amber. Amber was a tune written by John Cudini, and it's a funny kind of a song because it doesn't follow the usual format of bars per section and stuff like that. It's a little odd, and when you get something like that, it takes a second to get used of it, but all of a sudden something clicks, and it inspires you to play each section a little differently and make them lead into each other, and it's just so much more fun than just going ahead and making some, I don't want to call it drivel, but some pop song that just has no meaning or anything. Yeah, it might have a nice lyric and it might mean something to somebody,
yeah.
But musically, it's not very challenging. And all the tunes on this Boomerang album are very challenging, and they mean something musically to us. We're all going into the well. There's a lot of little drum solos throughout the songs.
Uh-huh.
It's a drummer's album. I said, come on, I didn't want to do drum solos, but they said, hey man, this is a drum record. You're going to have to play some short solos here. So they wrote it into the tracks, and I love it.
That's
I'm
great.
Really proud of it. I think it's the best record I've made.
What you've used the word challenging 3 times. What give me an example of what challenging means for somebody like you as a musician.
Challenging is out of the norm, where you'll have an odd number of bars and pushes and accents and stuff that don't fall in a normal place. So all of a sudden you have to like pay a little bit more attention to where we're all making these hits together.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes challenging. This record was so challenging that we rehearsed 3 afternoons at my house here to get the 12 songs together. Mm. And we had two, three hours at each rehearsal session. And we were reading the arrangements, the charts. Mm-hmm. So we're all making notes on the charts of things to do and how you go back here and you play that and then you go to this next section. And we actually use those charts during the recording session as well, because that's how challenging this music was. We didn't want to make a mistake, because you could miss the magic if somebody screwed something up on a take.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of intricacy in making this kind of music, as you mentioned.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And when it all falls together, which it did. We never spend more than 3 or 4 takes on any of the tunes on this record. Mm-hmm. But what you can tell when it all falls together and we stop playing and we all look at each other, let's go hear that, and then you listen to it. And there might be one little thing that needs fixing, you know. But
right.
It was so much fun to record this record in less than 3 days' time in the studio.
Yeah, that's incredible. So the album is Boomerang, and it'll be out
everywhere. September 7th,
and you can get it.
Streaming. You can get it, you know, everywhere.
All right, and
Amazon. As a matter of fact, today, this is August 6th, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Today is you can pre-order the album on Amazon, and they give you a digital download of Cheetahs and Gazelles. It's the opening track on the record. So you get a free track if you pre-order the record today.
All right, great. Well, go to Amazon.com, pre-order Boomerang, Danny Seiwell, and it's really great talking to you. And if you're doing other projects, let me know. I want to have you back on, because the way you guys
Likewise,
make music
Paul.
Are... just phenomenal what you guys can do. I write jokes, so I hear I can put words together, but I don't know how you put all that sound together. It always blows me away. So it's really great.
I hear you. That's nice, man. Yeah. Well, great talking to you, Paul.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. And
where are you located?
I am in New York City. Yeah,
right. Yeah, in the city.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm actually doing a one man show on Broadway right now, and it's really
nice.
Yeah, and I work on the Late Show with Stephen Colbert. I used to work on the Daily Show with Jon Stewart. I was a writer on that show, and
oh my God, that was my favorite, Jon Stewart. We so miss him.
Yeah, it was a
Trevor's doing a good job.
Yeah,
there was nobody like Jon Stewart. Yeah.
It was a trip, and you got a lot of feet, got a lot of. A lot of material that the world gives you, you know what I mean? So, go to Amazon.com, pre-order the album. It comes out September 7th, but pre-order it now. And it's Danny Seiwell, everybody. Thanks for being on, man. This is really great.
My pleasure, Paul.
All right, there you go. That was Danny Seiwell. How great is this guy? Very cool. Nice guy, too. Very, very humble and great stories. And please check out my show, Permission to Speak with Paul Mercurio. On Broadway next week and this week. We got 6 shows left going through August 22nd. Use the code PMFAN and you get 50% off, half price on tickets. Hope to see you there. We're having great stories. Come tell your story or just hang out and watch. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody. Appreciate the support.